Welcome back to Inglis. Time now to be joined by Mick Kent Jr., who Gareth Hall has just labelled one of the top five best-looking trainers
the
in Australia.
Tom Cruise of the racing
which
industry.
Is quite remarkable. I tell you what, he is looking very fashionable here today. How are you, Mick?
I'm very good, boys. How are you?
Very good indeed.
You enjoying your time here in Sydney? Because is it a working holiday in a way?
We always like getting away. The Melbourne Premier Sale is the worst one of the year because you have to work the horses in the morning beforehand and get through the Melbourne city traffic. But this is a very enjoyable sale. There's 411 lots. They're all top quality. This is a beautiful complex to get around, and it's easy to work. So there's a small amount of horses, top quality, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think you realise your stable's going pretty well if you can actually participate in this sale.
Yeah, look, you can. I think the sale 2 years ago, 50 lots made below 100 grand, and there's horses here for everyone. The elite stuff is very hard to get near, so we try and pluck around the edges.
Now, how have you guys gone so far? How many did you take home from day one?
Five, yeah. So we got a Zoostar Colt, which we bought half with Cura and Roll the Dice. It cost $375. Bought a gorgeous Piero out of a Redoute's mare. That cross is dynamite. I think 44 runners, three or four group ones,
Katie
nine
Queen.
Stakes winners. Yeah, Lavendi, Furore, I think. It's the most prolific cross in the stud book at the moment. Pierre out of Redoute's mare. So she's nice. Got an I'm Invincible Colt for 160. It was a steal. Out of Rawaya was a multiple Group 1 winner. The Shadwell horses here are unreserved. So, you know, you start at the bottom, which is nice for a change. There's no reserve of 400 on them. And he was 160. He's a beautiful horse. So jump on the website and take a share of him.
I was going to say, there's shares available for anyone who wants to race.
They're all sold by him at the moment. So the rest of them are all done. But... Yeah, he's a very good one to get involved in.
Why did he go for... was pretty cheap, really, wasn't
he? Yeah, so he was. So Mick loved the horse's type. He vetted clean.
Yep.
The mare has had a few chances. The mare has had five to race, all the winners, but no group winners yet. But it's the first time the mare's gone to I'm Invincible.
Yeah.
So nice type by I'm Invincible, ever multiple Group 1 winner for 160 grand. It's... if that's a good horse, well, he's worth anything.
What's I'm Invincible's stud fee?
It's about... it's between 2 and 3 somewhere at the moment.
Yeah. So you're 60,000 in front.
exactly. So, if that Nick works, well, he's worth anything.
How difficult is it? How much preparation do you and Mick put in? How many horses would you be looking at here in the preparation before putting your hand up?
Yeah, every horse.
Every single horse.
Yeah, so, as I said, it's easy this sale. Classic, there's 1,000 horses here. It's much more difficult, but 410 horses here. We saw them all. We had a short list of about 90. We cut down to 49, and then you sort of realise the ones you probably can't get near, so you get the ones better that you think you can afford and go from there. And you're just here trying to wheel and deal, you know. Sometimes you try and team up with somebody, so you, rather than compete against them in the ring, you go in together and have a bit more firepower.
Is it a skill or... are you born with it when you're trying to look at these horses? Obviously, we chat to a lot of the horse people, and some have different opinions what they're looking for, but did it take you a while to learn? Who's been your mentor when you're looking at these years?
Yeah. It takes a long time to learn.
Yeah.
When people first teach you, they teach you the easy things, like toe out or back at the knee. And the more you learn, the more you realise that's irrelevant. You know, by an athlete, if they have their legs a bit toed out, well, if they're fast, it doesn't matter.
Everyone says, I'm looking for an athlete, but what is your, I suppose, description of an athlete?
You want a horse to be balanced and in proportion. So size is irrelevant. We've seen small horses like Dundeal and Extreme Choice be champions, and big horses too, like Black Caviar and Haylis. So size is irrelevant, but they've got to be in proportion. So everything's got to sort of fit. A nice length of rein. Lovely. I think you see all good horses have a deep girth and a big shoulder. It's a must. Backs can be short or long. Like I wouldn't have bought Ayrton. His back is as long as a bus. You know, it's huge. And he passed in for 40 grand a yearling. But he could be the best horse in Australia. I'm not sure. If you're buying a sprinter, you want a big hindquarter. They've got to have power from behind. And I love horses with low set hocks. That's where they get their power from. They drive and... but there's no rules per se, but there's a certain thing that you have to have, and I think if you keep looking at the Group 1 fields like the Cox Plate, you see they all have that big girth and they're well balanced.
Do you and Mick look for the same things, or do you disagree on some types?
Yeah, Yeah, we'll disagree. And he'll say sometimes, oh, I might be wrong, but I'll back your judgment. And, you know, a lot of time, you just want the horse to tick more boxes than not. You know, it is a bit of a gamble. You know, everyone will say it's the best horse in the sale, but, you know, it's all an opinion and only time will tell.
And you do a lot of your track work, riding these horses on a morning there with your stable. Is there certain, I don't want you to mention size, but is there certain size that you just like, not your favourites in a way? And then there's other size that you love?
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
With their progeny?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure. Like the Old Invincibles seem to be easy to work with. They love to run. They really get up and get going early. I don't know. We just. I think you come here and you still got to buy athletes. The horses at this sale have massive pages. We found a lot of horses here have more page than horse. So we just buy an athlete. That's the main thing.
You mentioned Ayrton. Every time I speak to you or Mick, your eyes light up when you talk about this horse. When are we going to get to see him again?
Yeah, so I think for me the scary part is what he didn't do leading into his first run, because we normally give them 12 weeks with two trials. He had 10 weeks, one trial, and in that 10 weeks, he had 1 week off with a bad blood. So to do that on debut, which I thought he would, it was a bad race, his maiden, but to back up 13 days later, they went flat out, and I thought, well, what's Jamie going to do here? And she went forward with him, rode him like the best horse, and he ended up running 0.67 outside, exceeding Excel's track record. And I thought, Jesus, like, the pressure was on, and he was able to absorb it on the back of a light prep. So that's the scary part. And I think we did the right thing. Just six weeks off, and he is a totally different horse. He is furnished. He's glowing his coat, which he wasn't first prep with us. So I think that's the scary part, is what we didn't do with him. And now on the back of a slow, long build-up, that's the word. He could be anything.
So when does he kick off his winter campaign? Is he heading up to Queensland?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So I have him nominated in the Stradbroke. 2 weeks prior to that is the Fred Best. It's for three-year-olds over 1,400. If he wins that, he gets in, because I think he'll need to. His rating won't be up to sort of 90 by that time. If we don't win that, that's fine. And then we don't think he's up to the Stradbroke, that's fine. He's a young horse. So on Stradbroke Day, there's a mile three-year-old race. But I think he might kick off early May, possibly at Caulfield.
And I believe it's a money can't buy situation. You've told... We're refusing all offers.
Yeah, correct. we like him. Yeah, he's just a beautiful, beautiful sound horse. We've got lovely owners in him. And, there's so many big races now in Australia, you know, like Golden Eagles, and then you've got the Spring down here. So when you get a good one, I think it's nice to keep him.
Who's your favourite horse in your stable regarding, you know, he's probably your best mate there at the stables, that you enjoy having a chat to or jumping on his back?
Ayrton.
Yeah. No, it sounds like he's in love, Gareth.
Yeah, no, I had a big part in buying him out of the trials in New Zealand, and I got to ride him his first morning back here, and just I've still got goosebumps. I don't know. There's so many nice ones. I've just been to Rosehill this morning and saw Quantum Mechanic, and she's just gorgeous. You know, yep. She's been in work since December, when she started the campaign, rated 69, and now she's a Group 2 winner. She was a huge run in the Emancipation against some better mares again, and flew home for third on a day when you couldn't make ground. And she had seven runs. She's travelled up to Sydney, and this morning she's just glowing. She's gorgeous. I love hanging out with her. She's one of those mares that gives you goosebumps as well, because she just tries so hard for you.
Yeah, and you've got the key to her. You just drop her out and let her run home.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So... Said she can't lead, but Jamie Carr said early on this prep, she's a lot more dynamic if you can ride her back. And that was hard given the track pattern of the day, but I thought Josh Parr rode her beautifully, and she flashed home. And as you'd imagine, with that low rating at the start of the prep, we didn't nom her for the Coolmore Legacy. So I had to stump up the 20 grand to put her in, but she's paid her way in.
And when do we see Odium next?
Yeah, same race. So same race, she's second favourite now behind Probabil, who'll be very hard to beat. But Odium's been set for that race for a long time. She looks awesome, and Yeah, she'll be tough to beat there, I reckon.
Yeah, she was really good the other week. I want to talk to you about an issue that's been bubbling along. And you read an article that your dad wrote on the RSN website last night, and you retweeted it, and you added some thoughts from your own personal standpoint. Someone who's grown up in racing and now works 24/7 in it. Mm. And it's the staff shortages, the lack of skilled staff members. What's your take on it?
Yeah, well, I've worked overseas and I've seen how they do it over there. And in Britain, in Newmarket, there's a racing school. And it's brilliant. So people off the street can walk in, get some sort of diploma or certificate. It's like an 8-week course. But the horses are living on site. And again, that provides an offshoot for our off-the-track horses, gives them a second lease of life. So they're basically working in a stable and being educated how to care for them, how to look after them, how to put on a foot poultice. And then they have a riding school as a part of that, where you can wear a speaker or a microphone and talk to your instructor and learn to ride track work. As Dad well put in that article, that people come off the street into the stable and they're right away handling horses, A, that are dangerous, and B, worth a lot of money, and we've got to teach them on site. And I know it's easy to say, oh, why don't we teach them? We haven't necessarily got time in the working day of a trainer. It's very difficult. So with all the money we have, like, racing is thriving. There's a lot of money going around. Why can't we have a racing school that can develop people within 8 to 10 weeks and then place them into a stable that they'll be suited for?
I totally agree. Everyone, it seems like the tide is turning, that within the industry, everyone is on the same page to participants about this. It's now about getting the money to allow this to flourish. Is that what the next step needs to be?
Yeah. And so if you educate them and then create a pathway that they can get promotions through and upgrade their skill set and hopefully earn more money, yeah, it's a much more enticing job, you know. But at the moment, they don't know sort of how to get involved. How do they get into racing? They just kind of got a trainer. We say, yeah, we need staff, so we'll let you in. But yeah, if they could be educated and evaluated and then placed in the right stable, I mean, it makes so much sense. It's so straightforward.
And I guess when you talk to trainers, the most important member of their staff is nearly their track work riders.
Yep.
Because they get the feel of the horses. They can say, well, boss, I think this is a little sore, or he's flying. And you've got a big advantage, I would imagine, because you get to ride your own horses. But can you teach people to be great track work riders? Because some trainers tell me, like, some champion jockeys are the worst track work riders.
They're the worst judges, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and you're right. It's the most, it's a tough skill to learn, and it's a tough job. Up early, it can ruin your body, your back gets sore over the years. And as Dad said, you know, there used to be a apprentice program of 20 apprentices. 5 would make it, and the 15 that didn't had all been taught properly how to ride fast work, and they became very good track riders. And they can make good money. They can make $300 to $400 a morning if they ride enough horses. But at the moment, they're taking in 5, and we're not teaching them. Well, there might be a school somewhere, but there's not really a big program for it. And with a lot of kids these days growing up in cities, you know, and my parents all grew up riding horses to school. So that part of it's gone now. There's less and less people riding horses at young ages. And you know, we're going to need it. Like in Newmarket in England, it's a massive problem. Half of the track riders now come from overseas, Pakistan or India or Poland. So it's tough, you know.
The Joe Agresta Academy or something like that we could maybe have in the industry. I think there's a problem in the industry regarding jockeys, because you see footballers, for instance, or sporting stars, and the next generation's growing up, they're getting bigger and taller, and the male jockeys growing up, their generations as they go on are getting taller, and I think it's tougher to get male jockeys into the game, and that's why you see so many female jockeys doing so well.
For sure.
And we might have to go overseas to get our jockeys.
Yeah, perhaps. But the gap's just becoming wider and wider between, on one side of it, the sales is up and up and up, the prices we're spending, and they just keep adding money to these races. Like, they want to increase the Melbourne Cup prize money and all these bonus. And then on the other side of it is, you know, the staff wages aren't really getting much better. There's no incentives for staff. Like, I'd love to see...
Should a percentage of prize money go to staff and stables?
Absolutely. Yeah, happens in England, happens in New South Wales. Mm. It doesn't happen in Victoria. And you see staff really want to, you know, do well and see the horses do well because they're cheering them on.
Skin in the game.
Correct. Do we take in enough apprentices?
No.
How many do you think we should take in?
Yeah, well, they used to have 10. Now it's 5. It's not enough.
They used to have 50.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I know it costs, but the ones that don't make it are well-educated and skilled and then go into the workforce in racing.
It's fascinating discussion. Stick with us because I believe you know our next guest quite well, and that is Padraig.
Very good surgeon
Kelly, from his own equine veterinary centre. And Padraig, one of the unbelievable stories of this sale, I was talking to Seb and yourself the other night at the cocktail party, is that there was an orphan foal that went through this sale, lot 51, and not just an orphan foal, but the mother actually had two foals for the first few days, and she was feeding both of them. Welcome. Tell us the story.
Thank you. Yeah. No, it was a really, really nice end to the story there yesterday. Both of them sold and went to good homes. We, at Fernrigg Farm, we just set up just 3 years ago, and we've been backing ourselves, really, and trying to improve our broodmare band every year. And we bought two nice young mares, Shigeru Sindan and Roses for Deb. And we bought Roses for Deb. She's a grey mare, and my wife, Ray Louise, is obsessed with greys for some reason. So she paid a premium for her. And there were two beautiful young mares. They're actually very friendly together. They had a similar foaling date, so they came through the system together and arrived into the foaling unit at the same time. Unfortunately, the poor Roses for Deb, she just died tragically within a few minutes of giving birth. I was there myself that night. It was the early hours of a Sunday morning, and naturally you're upset and devastated, really, but you've got this lovely young colt on the ground, and all our attention went into taking care of him. And we're probably very fortunate that my veterinary clinic is set up on the farm at Fernrigg, so we brought him into a box, and my vet nurse, Kaylee, stayed up through the night with him and supplemented him with colostrum and made sure he had adequate nutrition and everything for the first few hours, took good care of him. The following morning, we woke up and we said we need to get a nurse mare now for this guy, and we called the two companies in the Hunter Valley that provide the nurse mares, and they said, unfortunately, at the time of year it was the end of October, there was a bit of a push on them, and they said it could be a week or two before we'd find one. So the next option then would be to supplement the foal, give him milk replacer out of a bucket. But as luck would have it then, her Roses for Deb best friend, Shigeru Sindan, foaled late that Sunday night. And we were there, we said, she's a pretty good tempered mare, we could chance this, we'll see how it works out. And we carefully just put the placenta of one foal over the other, trying to just con the mare a little bit that she might have given birth to two of them. And she was very good tempered. She left both foals nurse, and they both suckled under her for 10 days until the nurse mare became available, at which stage we took Ronnie away. Ronnie was his nickname because the girls were very fond of him. He loved his scratches and everything. So
it's quite remarkable. And then the upshot of the story is yesterday that Ronnie sold for $120,000, and then the other little foal sold for $300,000.
Yes.
So
yeah.
It's been a remarkable story.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah, it's really nice because you do, through the breeding season, you do long hours. You're up to the night, it can be tough, and things like that, they do upset you, but it's great and it's rewarding to see all the hard work that goes in, and to get the two of them through to the Easter yearling sale, that's massive. And for a young farm like us, to get the two of them here, both sold, going to good homes, we'd be excited to follow on and see how they go.
Was it tough to say goodbye to Ronnie?
It was, yeah. You could see the girls were a bit a bit lonesome to see him go, yeah. But no, I'd say that they'll all follow his career.
Where's
now.
Where's he going?
He's going to Queensland to Steve O'Day.
Okay, yeah.
Jamie Walter of Proven Thoroughbreds bought him.
Yeah, brilliant.
And the other guy then is going to the Friedman Brothers in Sydney. So they've had a good couple of weeks, so he'll get every chance there as well.
He certainly will. You need to get this man to buy a few up there, Mick Head Jr. as well. How unusual is that, Mick, to have one mum nurse two foals in the first 2 weeks.
Fantastic, isn't it? Great story. He's a very, very good vet and a very good surgeon. So he does a, obviously works for his partner, Fernrig, but he's one of the main vets for the major studs in the Hunter Valley as well. So, yeah, he's a good man to know.
For Drake, congratulations. Well done. Well done,
mate. Thank you very much.
Mick, we better let you go because the first lot's about to go through
good
the ring.
You, Michael. Enjoy
good luck today.
Sydney.
Beautiful. Right. Thank you very much,
guys. Have you got a winner for us, by the way? You got about 100 runners this week. I'll get them up for you.
Though. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Today, have something on Prince Amongst Men.
Race 3 sale.
That's it. All right, good luck. Three.
Good on you, Michael.
Thank
Thanks,
you.
Mate.
Cheers, boys. Thank you very much. We'll take a break for the 10 o'clock
news. He speaks so well, Michael Kent Jr.
Oh, yeah. There could be a leadership role there amongst the trainers. We'll continue to follow that story over the coming days and weeks as well. On the other side of this, it'll be Dino with a form preview. You might even go into the sale ring because the second lot through this morning is the first foal of Catchy, the Blue Diamond winner. So we want to follow that one. Plenty more to come throughout the morning. A live special extended broadcast from the sales. After the news, Odino finding all the winners today at sale.